Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are turning towards life as we do every week. This is a third space project, and if you want to know more about us, you can go to www.wearethirdspace.org. And more specifically, if you want to see all of these episodes in one place, you can go to find us on Spotify, you can come to our Facebook page. And you can go to turningtowards.life, which is a wonderful place where all of the episodes we've done so far are posted. And you can also choose to have these weekly conversations posted to your inbox, your email inbox, if you would like. So please find us by searching for us in those places. And also, you can suggest people to us through those means as well. As usual, we're very glad to be here, very happy to be bringing a source. And if you're new, you might like to know that every week, either Justin or I picks a source, which is a kind of jumping off point into a conversation that we do live together, unrehearsed and unplanned. This week, we've got a short passage by George Bernard Shaw to share with you, and then we will begin reflecting and wondering into it together once we've each had a go at reading it to the other. So you're so welcome to join us. You're so welcome to comment if you're on the Facebook group. You're so welcome to email us. You can email hello at turningtowards.life and you'll get to either both of us. And it's just very lovely to be in this conversation, Justin. So thank you for choosing the source and for always having the rolling load of sources coming our way. It's really wonderful.
Thank you, Lizzie. Very, very pleased to be here with you. Again, 300 and something weeks, and very glad to be with all of you who are listening. I'm going to add to what you said, Lizzie. I'm very excited that we're just announcing it over at Third Space, our Foundations of Coaching program for the current year, which is a 2-day introduction to the kind of work that we do. A very wonderful online, so accessible from all over the world. And you can find out all the dates there. And I just want to say thank you to everyone for being with us. There are some people who have newly found their way to us, and you are so welcome to be here with us. And there are other people who have been alongside us for the 6 years that we've been doing this. Is that right? Is it six?
I think we
Or is
might
it
be coming up
five?
on that. I think we're coming up on
Coming
six,
up, we're coming up on
the
six.
autumn or something, yeah.
I lose track. It's a long time. And I know, Lizzie, that you and I will talk about this more in the coming weeks, but we are brewing plans to make it possible for those of you who listen to us, maybe in a sort of remote way, doing it on your own, to join us in conversation every month in the coming months. And we're excited to be putting that together, a sort of turning towards life live endeavor, which we will talk about more when we have the details, which is coming up soon. And this week we have this source by George Bernard Shaw. And I want to say thank you to Simone, who brought this source to me this week. This is one of these things, Lizzie, where I haven't been sitting on this for a long time. It arrived in my lap. And one of the glorious things about this is it was recommended, sent to me by somebody who really lives this way, in the way that is described. Who doesn't keep any of herself in reserve when something is called for. And that's a wonderful presence to be around. So, Simon, thank you for being that kind of person and for sharing this with us. And here it is, A Splendid Torch, it's called, by George Bernard Shaw. This is the true joy in life, the being used for a purpose recognized by yourself as a mighty one, the being a force of nature. Instead of a feverish, selfish little clod of ailments and grievances complaining that the world will not devote itself to making you happy. I am of the opinion that my life belongs to the whole community, and as long as I live, it is my privilege to do for it whatever I can. I want to be thoroughly used up when I die. For the harder I work, the more I live. I rejoice in life for its own sake. Life is no brief candle for me. It is a sort of splendid torch which I have got hold of for the moment. And I want to make it burn as brightly as possible before handing it on to future generations.
Thanks, Justin. A splendid torch. This is the true joy in life. The being used for a purpose recognized by yourself as a mighty one. The being a force of nature instead of a feverish, selfish little cod of ailments and grievances, complaining that the world will not devote itself to making you happy. I'm of the opinion that my life belongs to the whole community, and as long as I live, it is my privilege to do for it whatever I can. I want to be thoroughly used up when I die. The harder I work, the more I live. I rejoice in life for its own sake. Life is no brief candle for me. It's a sort of splendid torch which I have got hold of for the moment, and I want to make it burn as brightly as possible before handing it on to future generations.
Ulysses, as you read, and as I felt into this, I was feeling such joy and possibility at holding life as a splendid torch which we've got hold of, or which has got hold of us for the moment, and making it burn as brightly as possible. Like, as we're sitting and talking, that feels so appealing to me. And I recognize in myself both that longing and the times when I feel like I'm really in contact with it. And there are many times. But I also recognize that I think it's really important. I'm really glad that George Bernard Shaw included this, that there is this other pole of it that's certainly in me, which is a kind of, it's both a kind of self-diminishment and a kind of grandiosity which come in me at the same time, and it's the one that's embedded in this treating being as feverish, selfish little clod of ailments and grievances, complaining that the world will not devote itself to making me happy. And I know that so well. It is so easy to live in that place where somehow it seems like I'm only going to be able to bring myself when the world organizes itself in such a way that I get met exactly. And then from that place, there's this very, very narrow window of what being met exactly by the world is. It's like I'll only get in the bath if the temperature is exactly right, not too hot and not too cold. And if it's not exactly right, there are certainly parts of me that are really well practiced at a kind of self-pity. Like, I deserve better than this. And when I say it's a kind of both a grandiosity and a deflation, I can feel both parts in it. Like, one part of it is I'm very small. So small, and I can't do anything less. I really can get that way. And the other part of it is much too big, which is, and I'm so important that the world has to meet me exactly. And I know when I'm caught up in that, it can be quite hard to see a way out of it for me. It's very convincing and very self-sealing. And so George Bernard Shaw's words are one of a number of set of sources I've found that have a chance to penetrate that kind of defensiveness. And the part that reaches me, the two parts I think that reach me most right now are, my life is very brief. My goodness, do I start to see more and more how brief it is? And what am I going to do with it? So the possibility that I might actually spend a large part of my life in the ailments and grievances and complaining that the world won't devote itself to making me happy. In the light of these words, I feel a bit like I'm sort of shocked into a kind of awakeness. Sort of, what am I doing? What on earth am I doing when I do that? And I need that kind of shocking into awakeness. And then the other part of it, Lizzie, is there are lots of kinds of ways that we could be used up by our lives that really use us up in a, waste us. But what about taking on the joy of dedicating myself to something that belongs to something much bigger than me, to this idea of belonging to the whole? and considering it a privilege to do for it whatever I can. I suppose what I'm pointing to in myself, that the aliveness in that the invitation feels very close, as does all the parts of me that want me to hold back, keep some of myself in reserve, because I don't know, somehow maybe that way I'll get exactly the life that I want. So I feel I'm wanting to name both sides of this, because to me it seems like I'm always going to live in the middle of that dynamic somehow. You know, for me, it's not a question of ending up in the place that George Bernard Shaw says and somehow never having any of this complication around it. And I'm curious about how to live in the middle of the to and fro of my bigness and smallness and my having life flow through me and then forgetting and then remembering and then forgetting and then remembering and forgetting and all of that.
Yeah, it does feel like a waking up passage to me as well. And the waking up part that really hit me when you were reading and just talking then as well. This line, I want to be thoroughly used up when I die, for the harder I work, the more I live. I notice that I have lots of parts of me that come forth when things are hard. Like I think there's a part of me that feels like ease is the best way to do things or something. And of course my life's not easy. So in a way that turns into a bit of a demand. My life's like everybody else's. There's kerfuffles and struggles and worries and concerns and various points of dark suffering and difficulty. And part of that is, I would call also like inner work, where I'm doing my best to not be the feverish, selfish little clod of ailments and grievances, complaining that the world isn't meeting me. When that begins to happen, I know that something on the inside has to shift, and so then my work has to begin. That's a kind of sign for me when I'm feeling like a victim, or I'm feeling like the world is being done to me and I don't have any power at all. I think, okay, I need to go inwards and find a way that's creative rather than feeling consistently diminished. And when I do that, it feels like hard work. And then that can come back round again as soon as it feels like hard work. I'm like, oh my gosh, my inner world isn't even meeting me. I don't feel like I have capacity. And so then when I can bring in this line of the harder I work, the more I live, of course I can see then that, oh, this working to not be in that place of victimhood and powerlessness, that is life. I'm exposing myself, I'm learning more, I'm finding that there's more to be brought forth in me than I knew in addressing my inner world and having deeper conversations with myself and other people. And so then this kind of hard, painful inner work of taking responsibility for my life, spoken to me in a way that the more I work, the more I live. I suddenly think, well, of course, I didn't come here for a quarter of a life. I didn't become a human to kind of stay on the fringes. I came to be used. I came to do the work that is mine to do and that's given to me and that I got thrown into. It's mine. This is my life. And so when George Bernard Shaw talks about being thoroughly used up, somehow that makes a lot of sense to me. It makes sense to me that things are hard. It makes sense to me that there's lessons to learn. It makes sense to me that not everything is easy, and that I can rejoice in life for its own sake, like relating to issues, like relating to difficulties as life itself, and then finding my way to having a relationship to this life as living is working and working is living, really, really helps me to accept things, to accept the hardness, to welcome the difficulty. And even if as I'm saying it, I feel quite soothed in the words. because I haven't had an easy day today. And so just to say that language to myself in this moment, well, of course, this is life itself. And it's my job to love the life I have and accept the life that's mine and the dynamics that show up and the trickiness and the goodness knows whatever troubles. And so I'm feeling grateful that there are those ones of us like George Bernard Shaw who write this down and stick a stake in the ground so that we can all kind of hang on to it every now and again and be invited into relating to our lives in a different way that doesn't have us keep in the spiral of, oh, life is happening to me. But there's a much more creative way of relating to it all.
I wonder if, listening to you, Lizzie, when you said, "I didn't come to have a quarter of a life. I didn't come to be on the fringes or on the sidelines." And how much we need people like George Bernard Shaw. And I was also thinking about something that maybe we'll find to bring from Kay Tempest at some point, where Kay writes, "Use me, flow through me." It's the lyrics to a poem or a song. Whether we, one of the reasons why we need people like Kay and George is because it's very easy for us to live in a very profound misunderstanding of ourselves and a very profound misunderstanding of life, which goes something like, "My real life will begin when," and then dot 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 dot, and then all the conditions that we have that means my real life will begin when I feel happy and it's easeful and uncomplicated, when I have everything organized exactly the way that I want, when I get met in all the ways that I long to be met, when, and you could have any number of those things in the list. And that what you're inviting us into by talking about a quarter life or a life on the fringes and contrasting it with what George Bernard Shaw writes, I think I feel the invitation from you into what it might take to really commit to living in the life that I actually have, not some other fantasy life that I'm waiting for. And of course, living in the life that I actually have, things will change all the time, and who knows what kind of life I'll end up with. It may be more like I want or less like I want over time. But there's no time to wait. There's no time to wait to do this. And I think that the mis we often talk about, you and I, about the wider culture that we live in and what the wider culture has taught us. And I think that the wider culture teaches us something very different from George Bernard Shaw. So the first thing it does is it teaches us there is a life which will be perfect for you. And the thing that you should do is you should throw everything into getting that. And then when you've got it, then you can do something that matters to you or feels meaningful. But it's not this now. It'll come when you buy the right thing or you get promoted or you're famous enough. Or, I mean, there's lots of different forms of it. And the other very, very poisonous thing that culture tells us is, yes, burn yourself up, but not for the sake of living in your life, but for the sake of getting the thing that you've been told that you should have. So I think one of the challenges of George Bernard Shaw's language is that lots of us experience ourselves as working very hard and being thoroughly used up. But we're not necessarily working very hard or being thoroughly used up for the sake of life itself, for the sake of being right in the midst of what we're in, for the sake of being of service to something. We're using up our lives. Often we've been convinced that we should use up our lives for the sake of things that really are not meaningful to us, that don't feel like life at all, so that one day we'll be in our lives. And the trouble with that is we might be dead before we get to it. And I'm really struck by how little in the wider culture has pointed us towards the kind of awakeness that George Bernard Shaw is pointing up to us, which is, in a way, what he's talking about is true joy being the defining characteristic, and joy as opposed to happiness, true joy can come in the midst of grief and difficulty and service and tiredness. And also joy requires us to rest at appropriate times and take good care of ourselves. It's a taking care, it's a stewardship kind of move, the move towards joy, rather than a kind of grasping, desperate, I have to have it, and if I don't have it, I haven't got life at all. Somehow it's a turning on the inside out.
For the interruption, just two little boys just came in, my nephews. They said, "It's not time to talk to me." Yeah, Justin, as you were speaking, I felt very. This big inquiry came up to me around the word purpose, and the beginning it talks about being used for a purpose recognized by yourself as a mighty one. Part of me goes, oh, there's a reason I'm alive and I have to find it or something that's outside of myself. And then I start wondering about the nature of inside and outside. And what if being used for a purpose recognized by yourself as a mighty one is a matter of getting to know this one? When, as you said, our culture at large is kind of throwing us away from ourselves all the time. Like, if you buy this, then you'll be something. Something will be fulfilled if you did this. Just kind of waiting for the life that's ours to come. And so it's having me ask this big question about purpose and self understanding, self knowledge, self knowing, self compassion, self contact. But maybe that's much more of a fruitful way of considering the word purpose than there's something out there I should be doing, and then beating myself over the head with a stick that I'm not doing it and I don't even know what it is or how to find it. Because I know I've felt that pressure in my life to know why I'm here and what I'm for. And in some ways it's an interesting pressure point because it's clearly meaningful to me because it's pressurizing. Like there's something in it that's important. But I think where to look then feels like it's calling me to be re-examined. And what if I begin to look on the inside and look to my life as it's already unfolded to see what's there rather than to look outside to find the thing that's going to be the thing that makes me feel purposeful. And it feels really nuanced and quite murky. But I think that trying to find something somewhere that's going to be the thing that makes everything right feels really mistaken in this moment as I'm sitting here with you and considering this phrase being used for a purpose recognized by me as a mighty one. Like, it feels very mighty to know myself. It feels really mighty to have contact with myself in a world that's spinning me away from myself all the time. And for me to be a force of nature, nature is not looking to its outside to find the destination of itself or something. It's in relationship to the world right next to it. And is an expression of the world. So I'm feeling very kind of redirected in this moment about what might be this true joy, that it might be to feel into what I'm made for, not as a destination or something, but as a recognition of myself and what my gifts are. What my qualities are, and then building a life around my qualities and my gifts rather than looking for my purpose on the outside.
I'm really touched by what you're saying. That the danger of the word purpose is that we somehow construct it as something that we don't have, that we have to get. or we're going to be told what the right purpose is, or somehow it's nothing to do with me, but when I've got it, then it will be to do with me. And the move that you've just made seemed to me to meet very beautifully what George Bernard Shaw says, which is that our lives aren't, one way of looking at life is it's a brief candle that's going to get blown out. How terrible. What a terrible situation we're in. Or to say, I've been handed a splendid torch that is going to burn through me, and I've got a hold of it right now. And my job is to make it burn as brightly as possible. And how do I have this life that comes through me burn as brightly as possible? Like you say, one of the places to attend to is, how is it burning in me? Even if it's only, it feels like it's burning only very weakly now, in what way does life burn in me? What qualities, what gifts, what commitments, what values, what cares, what joys? So when you say that the question that you ask is, where should we look? Which I think is a really good question. It's a very different question to what should I do? Mm. Starts in a different place. It ends with what should I do? It leads there. I'm really paraphrasing you, Lizzie, which is to observe our own lives closely enough, to pay attention, to be the ones who pay attention enough that we can tell how the unique one that we each are is life expressing itself in this place. So it's not look inside myself and forget the world. Like you said, the nature of nature is that it doesn't do that. It's looking inside myself to discover the world, in a way, to discover life itself as it, the beating pulse of life as it's moving through me. It's not somewhere else. It's right here. And the only place to begin is right here. And I can begin in ways that squish the life that's here, or exhaust it before it's time, or turn it to meaningless purpose. Or I can live in a way which breathes life, flame into this torch so that it can be a gift to other people. And again, I think that we have roundly, many of us have roundly been taught not to do that. We've been taught that to do that is somehow not paying attention to what's most real, that we'll always find that what's most real away from us in some way. When I feel into my own heart, one of the things I find is that it's not so hard to know what's true. Like, I think we humans are really wired. Wired's completely the wrong metaphor. We are sensitive to a kind of truthfulness in us that we can learn to pay attention to. And that qualities, as you said, is such a lovely way of talking about it, because instead of worrying about should I be a doctor or a washing the dishes person, should I be an artist or sweeping the streets, should I be a global politician or a professional wrestler, all of those kind of questions, many of which will be out of our reach for all kinds of reasons, I think we're asking the wrong question, because the truer question might be something like, is it kindness or courage? Is it love or laughter? Is it truthfulness or patience? Is it, and which, and it could be many of these at the same time, but which are the ones that really bring me to life, and can I dedicate myself to cultivating those? And then I might be washing the dishes or being an international wrestler or a global politician. It wouldn't really matter. I would be burning as brightly as possible right where I am, and handing it on, as George Bernard Shaw says, to those around me in exactly the way that's called for.
Yeah. I'm really struck, Justin, as you were talking about the systems that we participate in as forming people when we're younger, and how this is so not the orientation that anything comes from in certainly the education process that I've been part of. there were the subjects, and then I had to see if I could do them and then get better at them. There wasn't the me, and then wondering what qualities I had, and then seeing how they could be unfolded or attended to or nurtured or grown. And it suddenly just seems rather bonkers that we're orienting to life in such a strange way, where there's this limited number of subjects. And I don't know, there's like in my school anyway, there were like 12 subjects or something that you ended up doing. And then much, yeah, there were fewer subjects as you got older. And I get it. You know, it's like we have to organize ourselves somehow. And I totally understand that. But this way of talking, like what strikes me is that there's a hell of a lot of undoing to do from the system that someone like me has been in, that's a very traditional, straightforward education system of subjects and exams and all those things. There's a lot of undoing to be done to have it, to come at it this way, which is a very different question also to what are you good at, which may be aligned with purposefulness. But the things that I've found that that are most meaningful to me, I'm often not very good at them, but I'm willing to learn. You know, I'm really willing to learn because they really matter. But it's not like I'm an instant expert at them or something, or I have a God-given talent or something. That hasn't been the way that my purposefulness has arisen in my life. And so I'm just quite amazed in this moment that so much of our world is oriented to when you're good at something, someone says, do that. So this word ease as well, like maybe that's where my relationship to ease comes from as well, because when you're good at something, it's easy. And of course, how wonderful to just do something you're very good at. But I was good at things that didn't make my heart sing. I was good at things that didn't fulfill me. I was good at things that didn't seem to bring a deep sense of me being who I was in the world or who I felt I was meant to be in the world. And so I'm just really curious about the way that lots of our culture orients towards human gifts and qualities, and how it doesn't a lot of the time, but has kind of external reference points through which we identify ourselves.
As someone who was very good at something that was not life-giving for me, I'm really with you on this, Lizzie. And I wonder what it would be like, as the phrase that came to me whilst you were talking was, what it really takes to grow a human, to grow a human life. And it might take studying physics and chemistry and maths and English literature and all the things that our schools teach us, but it certainly includes something that we're talking about that's not included, which is how to pay attention, how to figure out what's calling for us to do, how to find out what means something, how to be present in the midst of things. And none of which were ever part of school for me. And I know being a parent aren't often part of our schooling or our work lives. And also, where I'm also left, Lizzie, is that the categories of what our culture deems things worth being good at leaves out and disenfranchises a huge number of people who aren't good at those things in a conventional sense, and yet have great gifts to bring that don't get recognised because they don't fit in. Like real wisdom or kindness or courage or being able to tell the truth, all these qualities that we've been talking about. So here's to a life of letting ourselves burn very brightly in the service of the qualities that are most alive in us, and then also learning to cultivate, do the difficult work of cultivating other alive kind of qualities in us. Maybe aliveness is, maybe it's what's most called for in any kind of difficult time, like many, many experienced people are experiencing this time in Earth's history as a difficult time. Maybe it's all of our work to bring qualities to life rather than trying to get somewhere we're not. Well, it's a joy being in this conversation with you as always, Lizzie. Thank you for showing up with the kind of bright, shining wisdom and generosity and truth and courage that you are. It's such joy to be in this conversation with you and with all of you who are with us. Thank you for joining us, whether you're with us just very occasionally or whether you're a steadfast accompanier of this conversation. You're all equally welcome, and all being well, we will be back again, same time, same place next week.
Everybody.
Bye bye.